Dear Shooter, it has been an interesting week, and we have a few things to chat about. So suppressors will be easier to get, but do you really know what you're looking for? And we took the new Kimber R7 Mako out for a spin. Oh my gosh, and the head of FEMA is unemployed. Here we go.
But they did state that when these guns are put together with different pieces or whatever, it's like an organ transplant.
Yeah, no. I got an effing shooting once.
It's a perishable skill.
Quitting?
Yes. My favorite death threat I ever got, the guy left his email address on.
He's just going to make it rain in Spanish, that's all.
Here's 20 cents, here's 20 cents, here's 20 cents. Wow, you just made that
clip on, it's not a strap on.
2 weeks for all that, that isn't training, that's camp.
You couldn't read a brochure on all that shit in that time.
Prepare to enter the space where nothing is safe, nothing is sacred, and offensive conversation is encouraged. Welcome to the Deer Shooter Podcast and your hosts, Jason Wilson, Brandy, and Jason Croteau.
Well, you're just throwing a whole list of shit at me today.
I am, and I just got a notification on my phone. You know, one of our hosts is having a birthday this week, so there's a party happening tomorrow.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about that. I already gave you your present. I don't want
to. You did. You totally did. And I'm going to sit on my deck with a drink in my hand and admire that said present.
So, where do we even start? I mean, I say we start with the Mako.
Fair enough. Because that's actually a hands-on thing that our readers and listeners might enjoy.
Mm-hmm. You showed up here yesterday, and you had this Kimber R7 Mako, and you said that we had to go shoot it.
Well, when you win a gun at an NRA event on a $20 ticket, and you have it for 2 weeks, and you haven't shot it yet, that requires some moral support, because that's clearly blasphemy.
Yeah.
So, we had to go shoot it.
We did.
I knew nothing about it other than it is Kimber's introduction into a striker-fired platform.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I like my Kimbers. I love my jewelry. They look really, really nice when you carry them around. I don't necessarily like a 1911 in a high round count class.
Right.
But,
well, and to be fair, I mean, Kimber gets a lot of hate. I mean, especially from instructors, because they just, and it's because they're built with such tight tolerances. They're 1911s. They don't handle heat and dirt well.
They don't. And a 1911, if you look at the GI models, they kind of rattle.
They do.
They have kind of an AK mindset of how they're assembled, and they run.
Oh, they like a raped ape.
And so you get into a 1911 because it does. For me, it points right. I mean, they're heavy enough to pull my pants down when I carry them, but I go to a chest rig and it works just fine.
They're called suspenders?
Yeah, I know. I know. And the older I get, the less acetal I have. So it's a thing. But being a fan of striker-fired pistols.
Yeah, this one caught my attention because it's like, ooh, I like Kimbers. I mean, they're beautifully made guns. So when you said, hey, Kimber's got a striker fired, I went, oh, really now?
Yeah. And again, it's always kind of a question mark when you see a traditional gun maker step outside their box.
They've been outside the box for a while. I mean, they've been making rifles for, what, a decade now?
Yeah, they're private labeling or somebody else making a rifle for them. Standard trend in the industry. They made a nice revolver, which I'm not a wheel gun guy, but at the end of the day, it's a nice revolver. So they do good work. So I was kind of interested to see how that translated into a carry gun in a polymer striker-fired platform.
Right. So we do. We go out, and we all shot this gun. And some curious findings.
So I wanted to like the extended mag with 15 rounds. I wanted to like that.
Right. Well, and let's describe this, okay, because it's what, like a 3-inch barrel? 2 3/4
2 3/4
It's a short barrel.
It's a shorty. Yeah.
And the grip itself is very, very short. Like, I mean, we're talking 3 fingers for most people.
Yeah, it's really small. It made to be a subcompact kind of carry gun.
Right.
And it definitely fits that bill. It's thin enough. It's small enough. You won't print.
Oh, it carries great, especially with the standard magazine, which unfortunately is only 10 rounds, but you'd never even know it was there.
Correct. Right. It's lightweight. Now, the extended mag, like I said, I wanted to like it because I'm a range guy and I like to shoot. And having that extra few rounds, not having to reload all the time, is kind of handy.
Right.
I'm a chubby puppy, so when I carry, I like the itty-bitty mag because it doesn't, you know, jab me too bad. And I shot this thing, and I didn't like how the full-size mag, the extended one, rolled in my hand. I didn't like it.
The full-sized one had a weird, like, curve towards the barrel. It curved funny.
Yeah, the geometry of it was weird.
So they took the 1911 grip angle and extended it, and gave you a much extended heel to that grip in the mag. And that's what I contributed to rolling in my hand like it did. And I didn't appreciate that. So I went to the next mag down, right? They have a mid extension. It only provides you a couple extra rounds. But I liked it a little better. Thinking, okay, maybe I found the one I like.
But it didn't curve.
No. Then I pulled the standard mag, which is a 10-rounder, and I handed it to Brandy, and she liked it.
It was easier to hold on to. It was more of a straight grip. It didn't hurt me in the wrist, because that's a bit of a snappy little thing.
It is snappy.
It did. It had a pretty snappy recoil to it, but it was weird, like, because I shot it with the extended mag,
yep,
and it rolled on me like a 1911.
Right.
But when I put the shorty mag, that, you know, my pinky was completely off the grip, it shot flat like a striker fired. It was weird.
So the only time I would ever say it's a good idea to shoot with less ammo capacity, it was a weird thing for me too, because I expected to like the extended mag.
Well, those of us with smaller hands, it didn't affect me. Like, I could hold on to that gun. You just couldn't.
Oh, I could hold on to it just fine. It just, I only had 2 fingers on the grip instead of 3. But and that may not be for everybody, right? I mean, now all 3 of us shot all 3 different magazines, and we all kind of had the same result.
Correct.
Somebody else may shoot it and have a completely different result. So, you know, we're not saying that, you know, the extended mag is bad or whatever, whatever. It's just, this is what we came up with.
I've shot a lot of firearms that had different lengths of magazines included, from Springfield through HK through...
Yeah, but Springfield's, for instance, and HK, the mag and the extended mag, they don't change the shape of the grip.
That's right. And when first time I ever had a situation where the magazine length contributed to the controllability of that firearm. And what was really weird is... less was better.
Right. It was weird, because usually you have more ammo, more weight. So I attribute it to the angle of the extended mag, because it is kind of cut away in the heel portion of where you're going to grip. So I don't know, maybe it was forcing me to heel the gun. I don't know.
That's a 1911 thing. If they followed the pattern from their previous guns, which why wouldn't they? Right? And they shot it with a standard mag. And thought, all right, we've got a striker fired that shoots nice and flat. Cool. The customers are going to want more ammo. So they made some other mags.
But who is the wise person who decided to curve this thing? I feel like if it were a straight mag, I would have a different opinion.
You probably would.
You probably would. I was just fascinated with the fact that the magazine drove performance.
Mm-hmm.
Probably more than anything, because I reviewed and checked my grip. I wasn't screwing that up. I reviewed and checked my stance. I wasn't screwing that up. I took time and care to align my sights. I wasn't screwing that up.
I think we all did. Like, after we had gone through all the mags and kind of figured out what we figured out, like, I went back through each one of the mags. making very, very sure I was gripping the gun the same way every time. Mm-hmm. And my results did not change.
Right. It was fascinating because it was the first time I've ever had that experience with a firearm before. I will tell you that it ran. It seemed
shoots great.
Function
trigger,
just fine.
Trigger was good.
The reset's a little long for my personal taste.
1911 reset.
It is long.
But it's a striker fire, so...
Mm-hmm. It's also positive, though, too. You knew when you hit the reset.
It is.
You knew is positive. When you ran out of ammo,
yes,
you could feel it.
There was a distinct change in the recoil impulse when you ran it to a lock position.
Yep. And that's something that I've noticed a lot of the newer striker fires that are coming out, it's hard to tell. And I don't know if they're... I don't know if manufacturers are doing that on purpose or it's just engineering or how they're putting them together, the springs, whatever they're using. But that's one of the things that we push is recognizing the difference in recoil impulse to know that you're either out of ammo or you've had a malfunction.
And I would say with my Glocks, you can tell when you go to slide lock. It's subtle, but it's there. With my HKs, I can't tell.
See, and I have a bad habit, and it's where the slide lock is on the HK and just the way I grip. I have a tendency to put upward pressure on the slide lock so it'll lock open on me when I don't want it to. And it's just it's a me problem. It's just the way I grip the gun.
Sure.
And I got a friend of mine that has the opposite problem. The way he grips, he's putting downward pressure so it never locks open.
Oh, geez. When it goes, my VP9 goes to slide lock. I don't recognize the difference between that and regular impulse.
See, I do, but I just do it to myself.
But this R7, they're distinct difference.
You knew
when it went to slide lock. There was no question. Now it's a fully ambi gun, and it's truly ambi slide lock on both sides, magazine drop both sides. So for those of us that don't like having to reposition our hands to top off or change mags, this is good.
Well, and it's great for left-handed shooters, too.
It works either way.
So, you know, you're not having to go and find a specific left-hand gun.
It's true.
Now, I mean, that's one of the things I've always liked about a lot of the Europeans. So the HKs, the Walthers, they're fully ambi anyway because of how they produce their magazine releases.
They don't do slide lock on both sides.
Yes, they do.
Mine don't.
I think the Walther that we have does, and my HK does.
Really?
Uh-huh.
Well, I got screwed on my HK because it doesn't. Anyway, I was just enamored with the idea that they finally figured that out. Because a lot of pistol manufacturers, it's right-handed.
Right. Well, and I get it. It's kind of a complicated little spring situation in there to make that ambi. And they also have to reconfigure the magazines, which from everybody I've talked to is the hardest part about designing a gun is the magazine.
Is that why those things cost so much?
Yeah, I think it is.
Because you go to buy a magazine for a gun, it's $40.
Minimum.
Yeah, entry-level type stuff. I mean, you look for an extended one with something maybe competition weight on the bottom of it, you're in $100.
Yeah, and that was one of the things I was really excited about with the RXM, with the Ruger Magpul collaboration, because those Magpul mags that fit the Rugers, they're like $15.
That is cheap.
I mean, and they work.
Even better.
So, yeah, because I always consider magazines to be kind of a consumable anyway. Like, they wear out.
Well, back in competition days, if you had a 1911 and it ran and then it didn't, you had a magazine problem.
Yep.
And it would develop. It wouldn't just be necessary out of the box.
Right.
So there were magazine makers like Chip McCormick that he made high-end magazines for the 1911.
Well, and the problem is, you know, and this was a problem with the old GI mags for the ARs. I mean, you're out in competition and you drop them on the ground, you step on them, mm-hmm. and now you've bent the feed lips slightly or whatever. Now, the old steel ones, you could put those back into place, a little bit of steel wool, and they ran just fine. But the aluminum ones, you were kind of hosed.
Yeah, the steel ones you could lift a truck up with. The aluminum ones, not so much. The plastic ones, if it's warm, you're not so bad, but if it's cold, you're screwed.
Yep. So, we all know now, with the big, beautiful bill, that suppressors will no longer be subject to massive taxation.
Yeah, so signed into law on the 4th of July. Mm-hmm. No more tax from the NFA on a couple different NFA items. Mm-hmm. Suppressors, short-barreled rifles, any other weapons were cited very specifically.
Yep.
In the wake of that, the pistol brace, the ATF has went, all right, enough. We're done talking about it. It's gone. We're not going to talk about it anymore.
Good.
So that's off the table. So guys, brace up.
Yeah. Or just
or don't.
Know, submit your paperwork.
Submit your paperwork.
Submit
that's
your
right.
Form 1. And last time I heard, Form 1s being submitted through e-filing were 24 to 48-hour approval.
Right. So, but we're headed toward a no-tax situation.
Right.
So predictively, the Form 1s for suppressors, short-barreled rifles will go away, which will be the catalyst for the NFA going away because now it's an unconstitutional registration.
Right. But politics aside, I think we're going to see an explosion in suppressors. Not that we really haven't in the last couple of years. I mean, I would definitely say that when we went to SHOT this year, this is the year of the suppressor. Everybody's making one.
Well, since 2020, the surge in ownership of suppressors has gone up almost 300%.
Oh, it doesn't surprise me at all.
And the desire for people to shoot with a shusher, has gone up immensely.
Well, why wouldn't you? I mean, it's just so much more enjoyable.
The ATF got pressure to process that paperwork a little faster, and you really saw it take off when people found out they could get their paperwork back in a week.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. My last one was 6 days.
Right.
Well, imagine now what's going to happen when you're not paying a tax stamp.
It'll be instant.
It takes $200. $200 is a lot.
Yeah.
It is.
It'll be instant. You don't have to wait for them to process an actual stamp. It's a physical stamp and send it back. So.
Yeah, but I think you're still gonna see wait times because you still have to do the paperwork as the way you're just not paying the money.
And they're gonna get flooded.
Oh my
with
God.
With the kiosks and the e-file system, I think your wait times are gonna go away.
I don't think so. I think
there's nothing to wait for a stamp. It's all.
But it's still you still have to process the paperwork and do the background.
So you've had the background done before.
Right.
Right. So you're in the queue.
Yeah, I don't disagree. But what I'm getting at is I think the system's going to get flooded and overloaded.
With all the people who in the past couldn't do that $200. So they're not in the system. They're all brand new.
Well, I would offer that most folks could do the $200. What they had a problem with is the paperwork and being on a list.
Yep. And that's what I saw,
too. And that's where we're headed from a political standpoint. That's going away.
So while this is getting easier to purchase, and you just said everybody's making one.
Oh, yeah.
How do you know, especially if you've never owned a suppressor before, what do you want, what do you need, what to look out for?
Oh, you're going
to
open that can of worms,
yes.
Are you?
It's something that they probably need to know. We all have suppressors. We know what the deal is with them, but there are some rules.
Well, and the rules come down to what you're going to use the thing for. Just like anything when the firearms were, it's application driven, mm-hmm. right? Some of it is caliber specific. Some of it's thread pitch. Some of it's going to be if you want to transition between different calibers. How quiet do you want it to be? How lightweight do you want it to be?
Mm-hmm.
All of those things are going to be key factors as we move forward into the discussion because you're right. Everybody's going to start making one. There's going to be a race to the bottom in the world of suppressors.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to see $30, $40, 22 cans. You're going to see the lion's share of them live in that $250 to $500 range, and they're going to be good. But are they quiet enough for what you want to do? Are they short enough, light enough for what you want to do? Now you're going to have all those choices to make.
Right.
Now you start looking at thread pitch, right? So you're in 22 caliber stuff. Typically, that's half 28.
Right.
You go bigger than that to say 30 cal work.
It's all 5/8 24.
5/8 24.
Or
you go bigger than that.
Well, yeah.
Now, I mean, you start looking at 338 and 45.
Most of those mount to a break.
They do breaks, or they are the 5/8, 9/16, 32.
And how confusing is it? Because they have all these numbers. I've looked at suppressors for one of your friends before. There's this needs an adapter, this doesn't have adapter, some are lock, yep, and some are not lock, and some are...
Are you going to transition it from one firearm to another? What thread pitch is on the firearm you want to put it on?
Well, and that's one of the things I really like about Silencer Co. So the actual attachment to your gun, they send you a tool, and you can change that out. So, for example, you know, that we have a couple of their 30 cals. All I have to do is unthread that back end, and I could get a different end that would go to a break. I could get it in a different thread pitch, and it's just screwing on that back plate.
Now you're talking about a hub assembly.
Yeah.
So for those of you that are like me thinking about getting into this, look for those things. If you are going to leave it on your 22 rimfire, half 28 is going to be fine.
Right.
If you're going to swap it back and forth, you might want to look at the hub assembly,
mm-hmm,
especially if you're going to go from a 338 can for a 9mm or a 8.6 black down to a 30 cal can. Well, if all are going to be the same can.
Caliber specific is important because I remember you putting a can on something it wasn't quite rated for.
Yes.
They fixed it, but they told you don't do that.
Well, there will always be an advantage to paying a little bit more and going with a company that is going to have that customer service level. I have a Thunderbeast, and I bought it, and I shot the absolute baffles out of the damn thing. And then decided I was going to put it on a super high-pressure 28 Nosler rifle because I love the can. It's quiet. It has a pitch that's attainable. And a couple shots in, it sounded really different. And I had a tube attached to the rifle, but there were no guts. So I take a picture of this and then send it off to Thunderbeast, and I get a call 10 minutes after I sent the email. And the guy's laughing at me. He totally just giggling. He goes, "What'd you shoot it on?" I told him, he goes, "Yeah, that suppressor wasn't rated for this."
Right.
And I said, "Okay, so where am I at? What do I got to do?" Because I was fully prepared to have to buy a new suppressor. I figured I had gotten the goodie out of that one.
Right.
Because I had shot the metric ton out of it. And he goes, "Nah, don't worry about it." And he hangs up the phone. Kind of a little bit rude. But I think he was just really working to not laugh at me any harder. A day later, out of Cheyenne, a package shows up. And it's my suppressor. Fixed. They took the guts of the new high magnum caliber rated suppressor of the day, and mind you, mine was 8 years old at this time, fixed it, replaced it, and said, "Thank you for being a customer." Didn't charge me a dime.
And I think that's why, you know, some of the big companies that, yes, their suppressors are a little more expensive, right? But you pay for that customer service.
Worth it.
It's worth it because you are going to get some of these people that are just going to have a mass produced, haven't even tried it. They're throwing it out there in colors because you all like colors, or they're going to be etched, or they're going to be whatever. Pretties and cheap are not always the best option.
Yep.
And you mentioned colors. And this is something I tell people, do not, because everybody now they're, you know, I know a lot of guys, and I do it, you know, rattle can your gun, right? Don't do it to the suppressor. They get too hot, and now you just have this smoking hulk on the end of your gun. But, you know, back to customer service. We have a can, and it's a Radical. Little known company, especially for suppressors, but a great suppressor. At one point, we just, right on the very outlet, muzzle end, we had a baffle strike.
On
the very outside edge of it. And
I was there that day.
And just to make sure everything was okay, I couldn't find anything else wrong with it, but I sent it in to him, had him check it out. I think we finally determined that it had unthreaded, you know, half a turn or something. We just barely caught the outside as the bullet exited. But they checked it out, said, "No, you're good to go. Just make sure it's tight, send it back." No problem. I think we had it back within a week.
Customer service.
One of my suppressors, it does at competition. After so many shots and stuff, I always check it to make sure it's tight. Also, before you check it, make sure it's not hot.
Well, and like, there are some companies that just get it because they send do. You an oven mitt with your suppressor.
Silencer Co. does. We have a bunch of them. It's great in the kitchen, too. I love those
it's
things.
It's a funny ha-ha, but gosh dang, that's a handy piece.
They work.
It is. Well, there's another thing that you guys haven't even considered. So, the new people who have never had a suppressor who are going to go do this.
Covers.
Covers and maintenance.
Well, and covers are not just fashion. They keep the heat of the suppressor from creating mirage so your optic doesn't get cloudy vision.
Yep. And I've had that. Like, I didn't have a cover on mine, and we were shooting all day. And, I mean, you know, you get about 30, 40 rounds in, I couldn't see the target through the mirage coming off the suppressor.
But I will tell you, there are suppressor cover companies out there that are producing koozie-level covers that are going to melt to your suppressor.
Right.
So be careful. One of the things I look for when I'm buying a cover is the use of Nomex. It's a fire-resistant, heat-resistant fabric, and they use it as the insulation,
mm-hmm.
right? It doesn't help you if they use nylon thread. It's going to come apart anyway.
Right.
But if they're using Nomex, they understand the dynamics of what they're getting into. You pay a little bit more for that cover because it's actually valuable. It's
but,
yeah, kit.
But they last. I've been really impressed. I mean, I've used Armageddon gears for a long, long time. Webad makes really good ones.
I've not had a Webad one yet. That's one of my next ones I'm going to be doing.
I've been really happy with their gear.
So, again, maintenance. So, I know you've had one that you've had to put in the sonic cleaner because it didn't have removable insides.
Yeah, so...
And now they have removable insides, so what's
some
the importance?
Some of them do,
but what's the importance of putting those baffles back in the right way?
Well,
it's very important,
yeah,
actually.
Yeah, but the nice thing is the way they produce the baffles, they lock together, they go in the suppressor, and then they only go in a certain orientation, or it won't go together.
In the make and model you've got. There are some that you will have a problem
yeah.
with. But the one I dropped in the cleaner... I had classes and loaned it out and shot, and it was noticeably heavier. So, through the sonic cleaner, and mine's not serviceable, it's welded up. And I lost 9 ounces of carbon and junk coming out of that. The old thought used to be, you shoot them on a Magnum type of rifle, the blast, you know, takes care of all that and keeps it out of it.
That's
not
crap.
The case. So don't buy that marketing piece of junk.
No, and I've heard that from people that I respect. And they're like, oh, yeah, you're shooting, you know, all the gases are going through so fast, it cleans itself out every time you shoot it. That is not the case.
It does not.
That is not the case.
No.
Everybody shoots at the volume we do.
No, and in fact, the can that I do have that's serviceable, I need to pull it apart and take something and tap the baffles out because there's enough carbon in there that they're stuck.
Yeah, that'll happen too. If you do put it in a sonic cleaner, you will lose all the coatings you had on it.
Oh, yeah.
That happened. Now I just got this kind of ugly suppressor that I put a cover on and it's fine.
Right.
But just know that it's not going to be as pretty.
Yeah, it won't be as pretty.
It'll be clean.
Yeah, well, and what's more important to you?
It's got to be quiet.
Cleanliness, right?
Let's talk about
quiet. Okay, yeah.
So when you're evaluating the suppressor for what you want it for, everybody wants it to be quiet, right? That's going to be driven by a couple factors.
Well, let's define quiet, okay? Because that's you know, movies have completely screwed up anybody's impression of a suppressor. You know, and that's why, you know, they listed, they're called silencers by the government, but that's not what they are.
That's correct.
You know, I think most of the suppressors, and we've put decibel meters on these things. Most of our suppressors run about 100 decibels, mm-hmm. Which is hearing safe, but it still makes noise.
Yes, it does, and you can hear it downrange. It's not like it's firing pin only quiet, right? That quietness is going to be driven by design, obviously how it manages those gases coming out of the gun,
mm-hmm.
and the rounds you're shooting. Right?
Is it based on caliber as well? Because I do know some of your suppressed 7 mags, I still
yes.
wear hearing protection, but I do have nerve damage in one ear. So
sure. Because if you think that you're going to take a 28 Nosler, 7 mag, 300 PRC, and make it quiet shooting a supersonic round of a Magnum caliber.
No, you're not.
Not going to happen.
No.
The laws of physics are not in your favor. You shoot subsonic ammo, like, say, 300 blackout, 8.6 blackout, 45 ACP, mm-hmm. something that was made for subsonic nature, it is going to be substantially quieter.
Yeah.
Now, 22 rimfire,
they click.
The rifle, they're subsonic by nature anyway. With being suppressed, they are very quiet.
Yeah. Well, we have a 22 pistol that we use around here for, you know, pest control, things sure. like that. We run subsonics. All you hear is the bolt cycle.
Right. Right. Now, that's another thing. It's got a cycle. If you run a semi-auto gun, now there's back pressure, and you're changing the dynamics of how that gun's going to run, mm-hmm. be aware. There may be some things you have to adjust in your gun.
Right. For ARs, for example, adjustable gas blocks are a thing.
They are. But if you wrap up the conversation about quiet, decibels is one thing. There's a tenuous pitch. Tone and a pitch. That's another. If it's on the higher end of the scale, it's going to seem louder.
Yep.
But it's really still hearing safe.
And we have a, you know, I have a can like that. I had it custom made for one of my rifles and got it. And while it is, I mean, we put the decibel meter on it. It was 100 decibels. But the pitch, because it's very piercing, makes it seem substantially louder.
And that's going to come down to how much you enjoy shooting with it, right? I still don't know of a way that you can go and test drive cans before you decide to buy one.
Yeah.
Shooting
ranges.
You find
a friend with cans.
Yeah, and that's a good place to start. But then you get kind of the Kool-Aid drinkers of, well, this is what I've got. That's what I'm going to buy. And it may not be the best option for what you're trying to do.
You know, a lot of indoor ranges now have suppressed guns that you can rent. And I'm sure if you went and had a conversation and went, hey, I've got these guns, I'd like to try the suppressors.
And an indoor range, you're going to get kind of a skewed sound profile if you intend to shoot outside most of the time.
Right.
Because it's going to be more intense inside.
Oh, yeah. You're still probably going to want ear pro, even suppressed.
Agreed. So pick one as close to the caliber you're going to shoot the most of. And remember, you can't shoot larger caliber stuff than what you bought it for.
Right. And they do make cans. I think, who is it, Gemtech that has the Omni?
Yes.
That will shoot. They're designed for multiple calibers. Now, understand that, you know, if you're going to shoot, you're going to buy a 30 cal can, right? Or let's say a 9mm or a 40 cal, something of that nature, to where you can shoot a 338. But then you want to put it on your AR. You have to understand that the more disparity that you've got, you know, you've got this 40 caliber tube that's designed to suppress that 40 caliber round, that 338 round, you go clear down to a 5.56, you've got enough gap in there, it's going to be substantially louder with the 5.56 because you're not trapping all the gas.
The larger you go with the smaller caliber you're shooting, the more sound bleed you're going to get.
Mm-hmm.
Still going to be
probably
hearing safe,
yeah,
but it's going to have a different sound signature sure.
Yeah, you're probably not going to like, you know, if you've got that large disparity of caliber, you're probably not going to be as happy with the results.
Yeah, so again, go as close to what you're going to shoot it on as you possibly can. You'll be happier with the result overall.
All right, so let's see. Wow, man, we covered the Mako. We've covered the suppressors.
Yeah.
I guess we'll come back and we'll talk about FEMA.
Uh-oh.
If you haven't tried 10th Mountain Whiskey, can you even call yourself a shooter? Okay, Mr. AK guy that only drinks vodka. 10th Mountain has that too. Still too much? Maybe that cordial would suit your unrefined palate. But for you real pipe hitters out there, the single malt can't be beat. Whiskey is an acquired taste. And if you don't like whiskey, I suggest you acquire some taste. Just enter Dear Shooter at checkout for 15% off your order. 10th Mountain Whiskey and Spirits Company. It's whiskey worth fighting for.
Are you fed up with paying premium prices for mediocre performance? It might be time to up your game with Lucid Optics. Lucid Optics delivers world record-setting performance without breaking the bank. From long-range precision, hunting application, and the first-ever reflex optic in blue. your mission won't be compromised. Lucid Optics are built tough as nails for the most demanding situations, using ED shot glass to ensure your view is crystal clear and backing it up with a lifetime warranty. To learn more, ask your dealer or go to lucidoptics.com. Lucid Optics, on target, under budget.
So this just came out yesterday. The acting head of FEMA, Cameron Hamilton, was very abruptly fired after his testimony to Congress. And the plan, I've heard both ways, that they want to substantially reduce FEMA's role in disaster relief or even eliminate it, putting those funds in towards state emergency management agencies.
And that's interesting.
And I don't know that that's necessarily a bad thing, given FEMA's track record.
I don't know that's a necessarily bad thing either. I will say that puts a lot of responsibility on the states to manage those funds appropriately.
But it also makes it to where everybody has different disasters. Like, you're not going to have an avalanche in Phoenix, right?
Well, I hope
so. Everybody has different disasters, so the state can focus on their disasters, like what were wildfires for the most part.
That makes sense.
It makes sense. It can be for everybody individually.
Well, and it's kind of, I view it kind of the same way I do with like the EPA. Every state has their own version of EPA. And I think that those states manage the resources better because they're there. And I've seen this where EPA comes in and they say that, well, this is how this has to be done. But then the state, their EPA department comes in and goes, well, no, that's not how it needs to be done here. And it becomes this great big fight between the feds and the state. You know, I can see having a federal agency to kind of oversee the state emergency management agencies, because we've seen where states screw it up too. Look at how California handled their wildfires. Look at how Louisiana handled Hurricane Katrina. You know, the governors and the mayors totally botched both of those.
That's directly to my point. If you left it to the states, for example, California, they'd have burnt down.
Oh, agreed.
On an arson.
Agreed.
It turned into a wildfire.
It took
federal intervention.
Right. But I don't dispute that. I think there needs to be oversight, but having the federal government come in and run it, I don't think it's the best plan.
Interesting.
Given the fact that they historically slow to respond, and look at after Hurricane Helene in North Carolina, they were actively disrupting disaster relief.
They were getting in the way of the local aid coming in.
Yeah.
That can't happen. And I think if you were to cite an issue that got this guy fired, that was it.
Oh, that was it.
You've got to do the job. And you've got to do the job with integrity above reproach if you're going to do it from a federal level. And FEMA was not up to that standard.
Oh, they're not even close.
And I would tell you Red Cross isn't either.
Oh, no. They're horrible.
In the grand scheme of response and actual helping, a blanket and coffee may be handy, but it's not going to fix.
Well, look at... Okay. I've seen this come out several times. Look at Red Cross. They are the absolute worst when it comes to your donations actually getting to where it's needed. I think it's like 9% of their donations actually go to help people.
Yeah, 9 cents on a dollar is not a good ratio.
No.
FEMA didn't do right. I mean, they got in the way of people trying to do right. That needs to change.
Well,
I don't know that it needs to abolish the agency.
Well, I think it needs to, like I said, I think it needs to go to more to an oversight role than active.
Okay, so you're advocating the feds making an account that they would allocate for natural disasters and dole it out to the state in which it happened when it happened.
And if they still had FEMA, FEMA's not in charge. They go to assist the certain state in their certain crisis.
Because there's going to be disaster recovery experts that the state just doesn't have.
which FEMA could have those. But then, you know, we all have different stuff going on.
Well, and you know,
I agree with that.
And one of the things that FEMA got, it just actually rolled over the coals over, and I think what really got this guy fired is they were using FEMA funds to put up illegal aliens in luxury hotels in New York.
Well, that's not a national disaster.
Well, that they created it.
I agree with you.
But that's not a disaster.
I'm being funny. I'm not necessarily defending him in that regard.
You're totally not funny.
$59 million to house illegal immigrants in luxury hotels in New York City.
And that's the problem with some of the more Democrat states, like your California, your New York.
But
they use the funds.
Right. But at the same time, though, look at the way the United States was set up. You know, on a certain level, we do have democracy. And that is that each state gets to do its own experimentation. And if they screw it up, people leave.
So what you're describing is a republic.
Yeah, oh yeah.
And so we're a democratic republic because of our form of government. The republic nature is the states still have a sovereignty.
Mm-hmm.
And I agree with the states having sovereignty. And this issue is no different, in my opinion. I'm not necessarily against giving the money to the states to manage their disasters. What I think we have to be careful about is each state is going to have to step up their responsibilities and be able to manage those on an annual basis.
Well, agreed. And how about we just cut out the federal government altogether and the state, we stop paying that money to the federal government, it goes to the state.
Well, if you could allocate which portions of my taxes come to Wyoming.
Oh, I know.
And fix our natural disasters here in Wyoming and not pay for the stuff in Texas.
Dude, when is the last time FEMA showed up to Wyoming? We had 250,000 acres on fire, evacuations. We don't see Red Cross or FEMA.
Which,
no.
Me
ever.
Living in Wyoming makes that case for you. Is if you could tell me how much taxes I'm going to save because I'm not paying for other place, I'm in. But you can't. It all goes to an aggregate because you don't have a crystal ball that's any better than mine to predict where a natural disaster is going
to hit. But to be fair, if Wyoming for 3 years does not have a natural disaster, but like Texas right now, it's flood after flood. That's not something you can predict either. And some years they don't have a disaster.
And
so
a few months ago in Texas, it was tornadoes, right? And a few months from now, it's going to be heat. August, September in Texas kills people. And it has hit national disaster level before.
Mm-hmm. Well, but what was it, 4 or 5 years ago when they had that great big ice storm that like knocked out power and
that was a national
people were
disaster.
Dying?
They weren't used to having ice.
Okay,
no.
So what did FEMA do in each of these circumstances?
Nada.
Very little. They weren't really present.
That's the problem.
And that's why I say, you know, the states are already handling most of this stuff on their own without FEMA. Do we really need it?
I mean, keep it in a federal fund. And when the governor goes,
we need help.
This is what happened. Then money gets allocated to that spot.
But that's just it. I don't think you need an agency to go out there and go, we're from the federal government, we're here to help, which means we're going to screw this totally up. But if, you know, put FEMA in an oversight role where, okay, yes, you have your federal fund, and a governor requests, hey, I need $10 million to fix this. Send the $10 million and send three guys from FEMA that do nothing but accounting.
Oversee how it's spent.
Yes.
I could get behind that. Here's the problem with federalizing the budget by the states. The governors are going to have arguments over who gets a bigger piece of the pie.
But it's not really, because wouldn't you have to have a disaster before you dipped in?
Yes, but it's going to have to get allocated, right? You got 50 states in the union, and not all of them have natural disasters every year.
Well, that's fine, but you know, obviously, you're going to have some kind of, you know, usually it's by committee in Congress, and they allocate the funds,
and we trust their math.
Well, that's why you have somebody there to oversee and make sure that the money is being distributed for the disaster, and we don't have something happen like what happened with the Clinton Foundation in Haiti.
I'm completely on board with that mindset.
You know, I don't have a problem with it.
I mean,
if California needs $50 million because of an arson fire that turned into a wildfire, okay. But show me where the money's going.
So send the bills to that office. That office handles the bills.
I won't want a situation to happen where we've bailed out Texas, we've bailed out California and Montana, Wyoming. Well, I'm so sorry. You don't have enough money left over in the funds. You're on your own.
Mm-hmm.
That's we're on our reality. Own. Anyway.
We're on our own. Yeah, well, that's the way it works now.
Have you ever heard of FEMA going to Montana either?
They were there.
Were they?
Yeah.
It was like, because us kind of central states with less population, they don't show up for that.
No. I mean, the BLM is a federal agency, and they handle our fires here in Wyoming.
Sort of. 250,000 acres.
No.
That's kind of their big deal.
Yeah, that is really what the BLM does here.
And those funds that come out of the same pool. So my only worry is you let these guys that are bad with math figure it out, right? And when it comes time for the smaller players like Wyoming, Montana, we're out of money. Sorry.
Well, and like I said, though, it's no different than the way it is now. But
if they're not paying FEMA's salary anymore?
There is a budget gain there. I can see it. I'm not going to argue that.
There's got to be a way.
It needs to be really thought through. And all the states are going to have to get on board. It has to be a unanimous decision. Good luck with
well,
that.
Well, we never have
yeah,
that.
Yeah, good luck with that. But
it's like putting 50 kindergartners in a room with one crayon. Let's see how that works out.
It'd be stuffed up somebody's nose and nobody gets to color.
Well, on that note... holy cow, we went over time. So, I guess until next week, the hell are we blaming?
FEMA.
We're blaming FEMA.
That's right.
I like it.